Hello, I'm Morgan Rhodes. You're listening to Heat Rocks. My co-host Oliver Wong is out doing scholarly things, scholarly pursuits, and he will be back with us next week. As you well know by now, every episode we invite a guest to join us to talk about a heat rock, you know, fire, flammables, combustible material. And today, we'll be going right back to 1971 to the seminal album by Marvin Gaye, What's Going On.
Whoa, oh, mercy, mercy me. Oh, things ain't what they used to be.
If you've listened to this show a time or two, you've probably heard the phrase layered vocals often. And while there are a myriad of ways to describe Marvin Gaye's 11th album, What's Going On, any description should include the use of multi-tracking and layered vocals, which produced an internal call and response back and forth, an echo that sounded like his conscience, which resonated with our own. How could it not? How could you ignore the utterings of a man whose party at the opening of the album went awry after Frankie came home from combat and the world turned blue? Shout out to Joe Sample. Pondering, pensive, rapt, musing, these are all synonyms for introspective. War, police violence, criminalization of black and brown folks, and a sobering grief, these are all reasons to be introspective. Reasons to break from your norm, sonically. Reasons to break from your genre. Reasons to surprise your fans and your label and Berry Gordy. Reasons to unite protest songs that dissolve so seamlessly between tracks. Reasons to want to holler, albeit in a falsetto. Reasons not to escalate. Reasons that the answer to war was behind door number 3, after faith and hope. Reasons to prophesy. Reasons to speak softly while carrying a big heart. Reasons to name, start, and end your album with one central and timeless question: what's going on? This album is a heat rock, meeting all the standards of a heat rock, meeting all the criterion of a heat rock. It is, for sure, a heat rock. Because on May 21st, 1971, Motown and Marvin Pence Gaye released a masterpiece. And I think Marvin Gaye could see them coming down his eyes, so he had to make the song cry. To that I say, Lord have mercy. Mercy, mercy me. What's Going On was the album pick of our guest today, Father Amdi. A griot is a storyteller in West African tradition, a praise singer, a poet or musician, a repository of oral tradition. We also call them preservationists, one who retains and recalls history for the uplift and safekeeping of culture. Our guest is certainly that. One of the founding fathers of the legendary Watts Prophets, he's contributed to culture, engaging all of his senses. His are the hands that baptized Nina Simone. His is the voice that spoke at Bob Marley's funeral. His are the eyes that saw firsthand the revolution and the uprising here in the city. He and his brothers lent their ears, his and Richard Dedeaux's and Otis O'Solomon's, to the voices of revolution, of uprising, and blessed us with their social commentary. His music, his and the Watts Prophets, blends jazz and spoken word. I'm honored to have Father Amdi in the studio today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
We always ask at the beginning of the show, how did you come to have this album in your possession, or what was your introduction to What's Going On?
Well, I don't know anybody during the era Marvin Gaye when he made What's Going On. I don't know any African-American that if they had the money, they didn't have that album.
Right, right.
I mean, that was a part. You couldn't go anywhere in America and not hear any community where there was music. You were going to hear that album as soon as you got out of the car somewhere. But how I became acquainted with Marvin Gaye is the Watts Prophets. I was working for the Los Angeles Brotherhood Crusade, a philanthropic organization. And each year we did a concert. and it would be a tribute to someone. And this year it was a tribute to Quincy Jones. Mm. And he had just gotten out of the hospital. And so we had become, being poets, you know, nobody really wanted us around at that time because poetry was just beginning to touch people. So being working at the Brotherhood Crusade, we got chosen a lot because I helped write the show. We got chosen to do tribute poems or introductory poems. And so we became quite well known for doing that. And so we got chosen to introduce Marvin Gaye. Mm. And when Richard finished the poem, I can't remember it now. I wish I knew where that poem was. Richard said, "Marvin Gaye." And Marvin walked past us, went out to the microphone. The people were standing over, screaming. And he turned around and left the mic and came back and said, "Who are you all, man? I ain't never been introduced like that. Who are you on?" And the producer was out. "Man, get back out there on stage." Get, because the people were just screaming. And so he ran back out on stage. But, "Hey, well, I want y'all number. I want y'all number." He was saying that as he went back out on stage. And that's how we got to know Marvin Gaye and to sometimes talk to him and do little things with him, or just, you know, never a show, but we would be on shows with him. Mm-hmm. And we all got to be his friend. He kind of always had the blues a little bit, but he was a nice cat, always kind. And I had another experience with his wife telling me about when he wrote that album, Trouble Man.
Sure.
How he would go out each day. He always brought bums home, she said, just people off the corner. He'd just pick them up sometime, bring them home, feed them, let them hear some music and this and that. And so he would, when he was doing that album, Trouble Man, he would bring the same guy home. And the guy would just sit in the corner. And he said, his wife said, every other day he'd see that guy sitting in the corner. So at the finish of the album, she had to make out the credit list and who gets paid. And she saw this name. And she asked Marvin, "Who is this?" He said, "Oh, that's that guy who was sitting in the corner over there." And she said, "What? He didn't do anything." And Marvin said, "Yes, he did." Mm. He's sitting in the corner over there in his spirit.
Providing inspiration.
And yes. I just wanted to say that. I didn't want to get off of that album that we're talking about. But those were some of the experiences I had around Marvin Gaye.
It's good that you're bringing that up, because spirituality, Marvin's conscience, is one of the things that makes up what's going on. What's going on is a rhetorical question and a real question about what was going on in 1971. And for the benefit of listeners that might not have been around in 1971 and be aware of what was going on, tell us what your experience was, what was going on in the world, and what was going on with you in 1971 as an artist and as a man.
In 1971, Dee Dee McNeil, who was a contract writer for Motown and had written songs for many of the stars there, was a part of our group. So we kind of knew when Marvin was trying to put this album together, because they didn't want it at Motown. It wasn't their type of music that they did. They wanted something else. They didn't want that, not that sound. They didn't want that kind of conversation. He got very political on that album. Mm-hmm. And he took you through the ghettos of America, and he took you on a trip in doing that album. You know what I mean? It flowed from, you could walk through what's going on, which is the question we still ask today.
Sure.
That's what make him, to me, such a great griot, such a great poet, because his work to this very moment lives in the library of people's minds all over this earth. There's nowhere where you don't hear Marvin Gaye played somewhere on this earth, every day, somewhere. His stuff, as I said, lives and continues to live. I think that that's what makes a great poet. Shakespeare's been dead I don't know how many hundreds of years, and his work is being said somewhere every day.
Sure.
Today.
Marvin Gaye's album, and we'll get back to it a little bit later, is one of those albums, and I get asked this a lot, like, you know, when you talk about the soundtrack to your life, this album is certainly a part of how I grew up, because it's synonymous with black folks. To your point, you're going to hear this growing up. You're going to hear this album. Somebody's going to have this. Somebody's going to play this. Whenever we'd have a Black History program, What's Going On or Inner City, it was a part of every Black History play.
That's right.
Every conversation we did on Revolution. Talk to us about what was going on when you came to hear this album for the first time. What were your first impressions when you heard the song, the whole album?
It was a wonderful. Everything was wonderful. It talked about what we was experiencing. I was an ex-drug addict, so I knew what he was talking about in his Flying High.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I go to the place where danger awaits me. Oh, no. And it's bound to forsake me. So stupid-minded.
I was asking the same question, what was happening to our community? He took us a walk through our community at that time. You got a sort of a visual and song of our lives at that time. One of the Watts prophets, Richard Dito, would turn Marvin Gaye on and sit at his desk for 2 or 3 days playing it over and over and over and over again, writing. It would just motivate him to write. He didn't take anything from more. He had all his stuff stacked up in his mind. But when he would get ready to release it, he would just sit there and turn Marvin Gaye on, and he didn't care what was happening around him. Marvin Gaye would focus him.
War is hell. When will it end? When will people start getting together again? Are things really getting better, like the newspaper said?
And I can remember the last time I was with him. It was at the Shrine Auditorium again. And it was a very different performance.
What year was this?
I can't remember. It was not long before he got killed, I believe. And he had a bunch of girls in his entourage, a bus full. And he got on stage and he took his shirt off. He just kind of got a little raunchy.
Sure.
And he didn't even have to. But it looked like he was trying harder and harder to touch the audience.
Sure.
In another kind of way. But that was the last time that I had an opportunity to be with him.
I want to talk a little bit about what was going on with Marvin Gaye in 1971 and sort of the inspiration of this album. What we do know is that part of the inspiration of this album was he had just come off of quite a bit of a depression after losing Tammy Terrell. She'd, you know, lost her battle with brain cancer, and she was gone. His brother Frankie had come back from the Vietnam War and had stories to tell, horror stories to tell. And trying to push this album off, Marvin Gaye had approached Berry Gordy and said, I want to write these socially conscious songs. And Berry Gordy was like, no, man, are you trying to ruin your career? Like, this is the trajectory we have you on. But this was on Marvin Gaye's heart, particularly the war and the Vietnam War. In 1971, my father had been back from the Vietnam War only a year and a half. So, and he doesn't talk about it that often. But what I know now about the Vietnam War is, like many wars, it was hell, and there were a lot of brothers that suffered specific things to being a Black man fighting a war and then coming home and still being considered not a hero, but a second-class citizen. Let's hear a little bit of what's going on.
You see, war is not the answer, for only love can.
It's interesting with that song because in 1971 and around then, war was on a lot of people's minds. The Vietnam War was heavy on a lot of artists' minds, that specific war. Besides what Marvin Gaye was talking about, Watts prophets had things to say about war. And I think it's Pain where you guys addressed a little bit of the war.
Yes, we talked about war a lot. But I guess kind of teared up right there when you played that, because today what Marvin was talking about was all of it. It wasn't just the war. He was talking about police brutality,
yes,
which is the same problem that we have today. It hasn't changed. And he saw so many mothers crying. I still see so many mothers crying. And he was so far ahead. I mean, you can go through that song and see all of the same things that he's talking about are accelerated or exaggerate are much more than they was when Marvin was talking about it. He was sort of like a prophet and giving us a picture of what's going on. We finally begin to figure it out what actually was going on in it. Sometimes it seems like if we're being evicted from Earth, and he understood that. He understood pain. He always put feeling into everything that he did, and he was very serious about it. And as I said, many of these songs live in the library of people's minds. I mean, there's hardly any African-American I can't ask that wouldn't know one.
Right.
One line.
Right.
You know, but Berry Gordy was very clever at that. You know, when he, in his songwriting, he kind of changed songwriting a bit to me because he made the hook be repeated numerous times. And they said the reason why, I think Dee Dee told me this, was at that time, you know, you wasn't the internet and all this. So you might, and you heard the music in the community. The community was loud, you know, you'd hear it, yeah, up and down the streets.
Yeah.
But when you would hear, what's going on? What's going on? What's going on? You'd hear as a car passed, hey, man, and you go in the record store and say, hey, man, I heard a thing. It said, what's going on? I know what that is. That's Marvin Gaye.
Right.
You know, so Berry kind of, he was a very brilliant cat. You know, he put that hook in there and hook in there so that you just passed. Instantly, you'd know the name of that song.
For sure.
Don't punish me with brutality. Come on, talk to me. You can see what's going on. Yeah, what's going on.
It's the unmistakable quality of that voice, that echo that went through the album. This is the first album that Marvin Gaye produced mostly by himself.
That's right.
His was the decision to start this song out as sort of, it starts out conversational. It starts out with a saxophone and people greeting each other, brothers, hey man, what's going on, what's going on? You think it's a party, and it is a party of sorts, but
that's right.
But it's welcoming his brother home, his brother's home, from what they've been through. I wanted to play a little bit of Watts Prophet's Pain.
Pain, pain, pain. A little for some and a whole lot for others. Complete crushing for those who never understand in this society. Pain is a part of man.
Pain,
pain.
Endure you must or be crushed. Pain,
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 pain.
Like fine eyes burning flesh.
I wanted to play that clip primarily because I think it's so brilliant how you tapped into so many of the themes that are present on this album, that there's a lot of conversation about pain on this album, about overcoming pain, about absorbing the pain that's going around you in your world and your community as an artist. We expect our artists to absorb this pain and then speak to the people about the pain. That's part of the responsibility of a prophet, to speak to the people on behalf of what's going on, to sort of be the voice of God. In terms of this album, what do you think Marvin Gaye did best in terms of communicating what was going on in the world? What did he do best? What did he leave you with?
He left me with his voice. He left me with inspiration. Mm. He was another one who taught us how to swing the blues. You could dance off of his blues, like B.B. King, you know. He was another one who taught us to swing the blues, and he's in that kind of character.
Every day I have the blues. Every day When you see me wearing woman.
He taught us to swing the blues. He looked into the future for us. Mm. He defined our present state at that time clearly. Marvin, you know, kind of gave us inspiration for today to continue asking the same question. What's going on?
What's going on?
What's really going on?
What's going on?
Yes, where are we really at? Where are these algorithms taking us?
Right.
I was just watching the other day how all these people were going after a chicken sandwich, and I knew what did it. Algorithms.
Popeye's algorithms.
Popeye's algorithms. You got it, baby.
For sure. I wanted to say something about how Marvin Gaye's mindset at the time in 1971 was shared by a lot of other artists. So, of course, the focus of our conversation is his album. But I just wanted to mention that war and inner war and outside turmoil was on the minds of a lot of artists. And I wanted to talk specifically about war. He was not the only artist to talk about war then, to record about war. In fact, before we got here, he had recorded a song called Soldier's Plea in 1962. And, you know, the rumor around that was he was working his way into talking about war. But there was something that happened to him between 1962 and 1971. So he was sort of, you know, outside of consciousness when he was talking about it in 1962 and more tapped in soul-wise in 1971. You can hear the difference if we could play a little bit of Marvin Gaye's Soldier's Plea from 1962.
Soldier boy, to you, we all must do our share, and darling, I don't mind. The only thing that's grieving me is leaving you behind. Just say you'll be my girl.
Early Marvin Gaye talking about war, but from a completely different perspective. He speaks in the perspective of a soldier that's hopeful. By the time we get to What's Going On, he speaks more to the aftermath of soldiers coming home, of people that have had that experience of watching lives being destroyed and experiencing on their own level. And so there is a little bit of a difference there between 1962, and of course there's a difference in his career in 1962 than 1971. Something has happened to him in between.
Well, you know, he probably always had this inside of him. He didn't just come up with that album.
Yeah.
That album was in his soul. But you're with a record company. You're trying to make money. You're trying to satisfy the CEO of that company.
Sure.
That you're working for. And they are. Marvin was handsome and could sing and make the sex thing come up and all that. And,
sure.
And you know, so that's where he was trapped in a sense. It probably was part of his frustration.
Sure.
That he couldn't get what he really wanted to say. A writer, when they first start, has to vomit. And he never got a chance to do that. He just came into the business singing beautiful love songs and getting over.
Yeah.
But he never got a chance until he had to take it. And that's when he said, I'm doing this album, and this is what I'm going to say.
We'll be back on Heat Rocks with our guest, Father Amdi, talking Marvin Gaye's 1971 seminal album, What's Going On, after a brief word from our sibling Max Fun podcast. Don't go anywhere.
I've got a message for you.
Hi, it's me, April Wolfe, the host of Switchblade Sisters and co-writer of the new horror film, Black Christmas.
And I'm Katie Walsh, film critic and occasional host of Switchblade Sisters.
We're here to announce that for one episode, we will be doing something a little different. Much like Jeff Goldblum and David Cronenberg's The Fly, I will be going through a truly disturbing transformation.
April will transform from the interviewer into the interviewee. I will be asking her all about her new film, Black Christmas, her writing process, and ongoing existential dread.
But I will also be discussing John Carpenter's perfect masterpiece, Prince of Darkness.
You guys seen any movies you like?
So tune in to Switchblade Sisters for a one-of-a-kind episode with April Wolfe and me, Katie Walsh.
See you then.
Only the corrupt I listen to now. Hey, if you like your podcast to be focused and well-researched and your podcast host to be uncharismatic, unhorny strangers who have no interest in horses, then this is not the podcast for you.
Again, what's your deal? I'm Emily.
I'm Lisa.
Our show's called Baby Geniuses.
And its hosts are horny adult idiots. We discover weird Wikipedia pages every episode.
We discuss institutional misogyny.
We ask each other the dumbest questions, and our listeners won't stop sending us pictures of their butts.
We haven't asked them to stop, but they also aren't stopping.
Join us on Baby Geniuses
every other week on MaximumFun.org.
All right, and we are back talking Marvin Gaye's 1971 seminal What's Going On with Father Amdi. Let's talk a little bit about one of the tracks on the album, which I think speaks a lot to what was going on in the community, the community heartbeat, the burden of the community, and what was on people's minds. And it's also one of my favorites, which is Inner City.
I knew he was going to say.
Yeah. Bills pile up, sky high. Send that boy off to die. What's your first feeling coming out of that, hearing it?
I'm still howling.
Dude.
I'm still howling. I'm still makes me want to holler. I feel the same way he do right this very moment. I mean, there's some way out things going on now. Some good things, but overall, people are just rushing through life. And it's very different for me as a poet and an artist. Because my download came from my grandmother, my uncle, my aunt, my cousins, and so. But this generation download came from a computer. And that's a little different than the download that I got. I hear a lot of old people say when I talk to my youngsters today, I'm talking to them, and their phone is there also in the conversation. So we live in a parallel universe is what I'm trying to say.
Sure.
Sometimes, at least I do. I go in and out of digital as much as I can.
Same.
You know.
Same. Yes. But I'm not exactly a part of this new generation. I'm Generation X.
Uh-huh.
So, and we talk about this on the show all the time. I'm always teasing Christian because Christian's a millennial. So this generation you're talking about with the phone right next to him, that's him. No shame. No shame, Christian. But I hear your heart and your concern about the youth. And this was also evident on this album. I mean, one of the most beautiful songs on this album, to me at least, is Save the Children.
Please.
Who's willing to try?
Who is willing to try?
To save a world?
To save a world.
That's destined to
that
die.
That is destined to die.
To me, that's prophecy.
Yes.
That's prophecy.
That's right. The world's not singing now. As you look across America at the homeless, and the numbers growing, and who really cares? I mean...
Who really cares?
You know, Otis has a poem. He says, everybody's full of bull, trying to get a little pool, if possible, a wagon full. That seems to be where everybody's at, and everybody's rushing.
Right. And the continuing generations, especially the children, certainly on your heart, definitely on the heart of Marvin Gaye, and also on the heart of Curtis Mayfield. Of course, 1971 is the year he puts out the Roots album. And one of my favorite songs on there is We Gotta Have Peace.
That's right. Give my soul an equal chance. It could be such a sweet romance. And the soldiers were dead and gone. If only we could bring back one.
I'm not an artist, and I won't know what it's like to be an artist, but I've always wanted to ask, and sometimes I ask artists, what does it cost and what does it give back to speak about what's going on in the community, to pour your heart and your soul into your art, to speak about the pains and the ills? What does it cost you and what does it give back? What does it take from you to have these conversations and to use your art to make commentary?
It's very difficult to speak the truth a lot of times if it's raw and very hard truth. We've talked about Marvin Gaye and what he talked about, what was going on. But when Marvin was talking, there were no algorithms. There was no digital world. There was no internet. So I hope that in this interview I get to where I can do a poem on what I think Marvin would be talking about today.
Sure.
May I do it?
Absolutely.
The internet is a wonderful thing, but everything has a yin and a yang. And I hear people say each and every day that the internet will set modern man free like a dolphin in the sea. Now, this statement completely confuses me. Since when, my friends, has a net set anything free? Now, my simpleness I regret, but where's the freedom in the net? Fishermen make nets, spiders weave webs, both are traps. The spider knows all in his web. He keeps it inside day or night, wrapped real, real tight, with a click and a bite. Is it online or inline? Download or unload? Where's the freedom in a net? Stealth traps in your laps, net zero, hero, sky, tail, intel, DSL, email, tell. Processing your personal soulful info? No telling where it go. Only the net maker really know. Now, you used to be able to shred it, but now that's jive. The hard drive is always alive. Wrap real, real tight with a click and a bite. Spider-Man can pull you up tonight. Free man freely entering a net will one day experience regret because there's no freedom in a net. Fishermen control their nets. Spiders control their web. Who, my friend, controls the World Wide Web you're in? What spider has you in its website? Wrap real tight with a click and a bite. I think that's where Marvin Gaye would be talking about today. Now, that era is gone. The youth of today have to deal with now. And what are they dealing with? They must understand that phone in their hands and how that instrument affects them. And that's the only way they can deal with it. They have to understand how it affects them. And one example is to see all those people running after that chicken sandwich. Again, I say that.
So in other words, the children need saving right now. Save the children.
In so many levels.
Sure.
On so many levels, they need saving.
Save the Children is, as I said, it's one of my favorites.
But save the world, though.
Save the world.
The whole world needs saving right now.
There's a moment on that song, and I think it's at the 307 mark. One of the most beautiful things about this album is the way that each song segues into the next.
Mm-hmm.
It's like one complete thought. So there isn't a, it is the whole.
That's right.
It's the whole heart of Marvin Gaye. One complete thought. He never stops and starts. This is him, as you say, putting his soul out there.
That's
finally
right.
Getting that chance to put his soul out there.
You will save the baby, all of the children. But who really cares? Who's willing to try? Yeah.
The reason why I feel like, and thank you so much for bringing up this album, because you forced me to go back to it and to re-listen to this album, and I think I heard it in a way that I hadn't heard it before. Growing up, you'd hear the elders always say, ain't nothing new under the sun.
That's right.
There's nothing new under the sun. And in listening to this album, that was the first thing that I thought, there's nothing new under the sun. What he was talking about it was such a visionary response to what was going on. Not just what was going on now, but it was almost like he knew.
That's right.
That this album would survive him, but also these themes would survive him, that nothing would change. And he's asking us, like, I'm laying the groundwork, but I'm also asking you, what are you going to do? Who really cares? Do you care? Not just in general, who really cares, but do you care, and do you care enough about what's going on? So one of my favorite songs. And I want to ask you, because we ask our guests all the time, if there's a song on the album, let's just say, you know, we talked about everyone should know a Marvin Gaye song and everyone should know a song off this album. But let's just assume that we meet someone who doesn't, who's never heard this album, to get them into the mindset and the spirit of Marvin Gaye. Which song would you suggest that they listen to from the album?
Oh, that's very difficult to say, but just a complete stranger, I probably would say What's Going On.
What's Going On?
Mm-hmm.
Why that one?
Put that question out there, and I think it shows you what's going on with the questions that it asks.
Sure.
You know, so I think that would be very revealing to a person who first gets that album.
What do you think you learn about Marvin Gaye as an artist and as a man in that song?
Oh, I learned that he had very deep feeling and a very broad understanding. And as I say, in a wonderful spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see guys, artists like this, what you have to understand with artists like that guy, that it's not all him. It's also his ancestors that wanted something said. You see, we're the end results of thousands of years of ancestors, father to son, father to son, father to son. We're the end results of all of that. Marvin was the end results of all of his grandfathers that ever came about. And whatever they went through was in him too. And somehow, as you become less egotistical and a more seasoned artist, and you're serious with deep feelings, you find out it's not always all about you.
Mm-hmm.
It's those voices, those lines that you hear in your mind.
Because God is my friend. Jesus is my friend. He loves us whether or not we know it. And he'll forgive all our sins.
And I know Marvin heard lines, because I can hear those lines, and I see those lines living, as I said, in the library of people's minds.
Yeah.
And so that's the one that I would give to them. And he, again, as I can say, was a wonderful spirit, a wonderful, inspiring spirit. I can listen to that song, to his album, anytime. It doesn't make any, it's always fresh. Like one of the wise prophets say, truth don't spoil. It's always fresh.
Indeed.
Whenever you get it.
Indeed. This album is not just social commentary, but to me it's also a deeply spiritual album. And spirituality is something that's a conversation that surrounded Marvin Gaye. His whole career was a part of his life. And he was asked about his faith and a little bit about his beliefs in an interview that he did when he was living overseas. He was interviewed on a show called The Follies. And if we could play a little bit of that.
In your career, you've done an LP centered around the theme of sex, and other songs are very religious. The LP was Let's Get It On. And also some of your songs are very spiritually minded, very religious. So there's the body and the soul. Could you elaborate on that?
Well, I think that, I'm not going to pretend I'm a saint or a monk or anything, but... I am what I am, and I think as a whole individual, one should express what one feels and what one feels inside one's soul as an artist. And, whoops, pardon me. And I just try and express life as I see it, and certainly sensuality and sex is a great part of our lives. We don't like to speak of it too often. It seems better if it's done quietly, but... I don't mind recording about it, and I feel that it's been within taste. As far as the spirituality is concerned, I'm the son of an apostolic minister, and I know a great deal about God, and I been with God all my life, and there too, sounds a bit hypocritical, but I'm pretty religious guy. I don't feel that sex and religion, they're both controversial, but if one can work it out properly, I think it works okay.
Did you think, because this has been a bit of a debate around his career, did you think that Marvin Gaye was struggling with being an artist that wrote about sexuality and one that wrote about spirituality? Was he struggling with two sides of himself, or did he just embody two sides of himself? Did you see his career and his life as a struggle between two parts?
I think he was a complete human being.
Sure.
He had all of that in him. You know, we have all the extremes. We can go from hate to love. And Marvin had all of that. But he had a profoundly deep spirit. And as I said, maybe he didn't articulate it, but as you get older, you begin to, you know, where do those lines come from in your mind? You know, you begin to wonder about the spiritual part of you. And I think he was a holiness of Pentecostal.
Right.
And they were always on that feeling, that spirit in within you that was always there. So I see him as a deeply spiritual man. And again, you know, sometimes God works in spiritual, different kind of ways, they say. And if you don't go the way that you go down the wrong road, you stumble until you get on the right track. And I think that, or the track that your mind is, or your spirit is trying to get out of you to say. I think when he got to what's going on, all of that spirit, all of those ancestors came out of him. And
as well as the voice of God.
There you go.
As well as the
spirit
of God.
That's right. The spirit of the Most High.
We should be leaving one another for Jesus. Jesus left a long time ago. Said he would return. He left us a book to believe in. In it we...
I see a person who is able to speak about community stuff, the battles in the community, his beautiful relationship with God, and also other themes. I don't see a battle. I see what you say, a complete whole human being.
That's right.
And people, a complete artist.
And people label them. The Watts prophets were labeled militants. We weren't militants. We were just fathers and sons and that were speaking about the things that were going on in our lives and within our communities. And we lost many of jobs because they would say, oh, they're militants. Mm. And we weren't militant at all. We were just speaking about our lives and what we were experiencing as human beings. And that's all Marvin was doing at that time. We were all, that era was a very vocal era. It was the beginning of rap. And that's what the Watts Prophets started out. We started out to open an area of expression for those with no area of expression. And Marvin was, too. He made people step out and speak up.
I wanted to ask you, because you hinted at this a little bit earlier, and we didn't get a chance to get into it, but one of the songs on here is about addiction. It is Flying High in the Friendly Skies, which I thought was a very clever way to describe and to talk about heroin addiction. And although the subject's heavy, it is to me one of the most gorgeous songs on this album.
But I go crazy when I can't find it. In the morning, be all right.
I go to a place where danger awaits me. And in 1971, heroin is a big issue. We've by this time lost Frankie Lyman, we've lost Rudy Lewis, we've lost Billie Holiday. We're en route to lose a Janis Joplin. I thought it was an interesting and really pretty stance and the way he expressed addiction and what was going on. Your thoughts about that song? Because it's one of my favorites.
Very close to me because I was a heroin addict. And that's the poem. I had plenty of fun and shot plenty of dope and often thought there was no hope. But being a man who thought I fought and search for the key that would set me free from my hype hustling hard all night. So I knew what he had experienced. And I knew that, that may help somebody to hear him expressing what he went through. So it touched me very, very deeply, as I said. And as we were all kind of writing about the same themes.
Yeah.
If you go to Curtis Mayfield, I can't remember the song he got. He's got a song
sure.
about drugs, the Watts Prophets. Oscar,
James Brown,
heroin,
King heroin.
Yeah. You know, we were all addressing what we were actually experiencing, and you couldn't miss it if you were in the African American community.
In 1971.
And that's right.
Yeah, 1971.
And just about at this time too. It's
sure.
Things haven't changed. They've just accelerated and grown.
Let's hear a little bit of King Heroin, Christian.
I had a dream the other night, and I was sitting in my living room. Dozed off to sleep, so I started dreaming. I dream I walked in a place and I saw a real strange, weird object standing up talking to the people. And I found out it was heroin, that deadly drug that go in your vein. He said, I came to this country without a passport.
I love King Heroin. I love that song. I love the difference between that song and Flying High in the Friendly Skies. We're still talking about the same drug.
Mm-hmm.
We're still talking about the same effects. It's just everyone's different, narrational point. But I think to your point, you were all saying the same thing, writing
That's
about
right.
the same things, the price that it cost, that addiction cost, especially heroin. And so many African Americans and so many artists had lost their lives by that time.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about Mercy, Mercy Me, because that hasn't come up in the conversation.
Oh, oh, mercy, mercy me. All things ain't what they used to be. Lost my radiation underground and in the sky. Animals and
it's just so prophetic. I couldn't tell you that I like anyone better than I. Each one is a jewel to
yeah.
me.
All things and what they used to be. What about this overcrowded land? How much more be used from man? Can't you stand?
It's hard to ask people to do this, especially writers and poets and artists, but we ask this of all of our guests. If you had to describe the album in three words, what would they be?
Wonderful is one. Inspiring is another. And divine inspiration.
Mm.
Divine inspiration is the other.
Don't tell me what's going on. I'll tell you what's going on.
So glad that you picked this album, Father. So glad to have the chance to speak with you as an elder. And I know you walk as a prophet and as a poet, so I appreciate you picking this album from one poet and prophet talking about another. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me and being such a wonderful host.
Thank you so much. Tell us where we can find you and what's going on and what's next.
Well, I'm doing an album. Called In Defense of Reality.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want artificial reality. I want reality.
Sure.
And that's what my new album is about. I have different kind of poems on there that might, strike out a little bit at some of the things that I see. Like I have one poem, it's called Google Told Me a Lie. And
I love it.
You know what I mean? So these are the things that I'm talking about, my response to how technology is affecting me. And I think anybody that wants to understand it has to see directly how it's affecting them. Like when you think of something and suddenly there it is on your phone. Well, to an older person like me, I don't like my mind invaded like that, and I'd like to know how you invaded it, and I would have, like to have the key to lock you out.
Sure.
But the younger generation don't care about their privacy, but I do.
That's going to do it for our interview with Father Amdi about this gorgeous, precious, prolific album, What's Going On, by Marvin Gaye. For the benefit of those that are listening, familiarize yourself with this album and the career of Marvin Gaye, as well as the career of the Watts Prophets, who continue to be strong and voices and in support of the preservation of this culture.
You've been listening to Heat Rocks with me, Oliver Wong, and Morgan Rhodes.
Our theme music is Crown Ones by Thess One of People Under the Stairs. Shout out to Thess for the hookup.
Heat Rocks is produced by myself and Morgan, alongside Christian Duenas, who also edits, engineers, and does the booking for our shows.
Our senior producer is Laura Swisher, and our executive producer is Jesse Thorne.
We are part of the Maximum Fun family, taping every week live in their studios in the Westlake neighborhood of Los Angeles.
And before we get out of here, here's a teaser for next week's episode, where we sit down with Christella Alonzo to talk A Tribe Called Quest's. We got it from here. Thank you for your service.
I'll be honest with you. We the People, I stopped doing stand-up in 2016. I took a break from doing stand-up. I devoted my life for the next 3 years traveling the country, helping out communities, helping out people that needed that were shell-shocked from the election because of this song. That's what I did.
Damn.
I left stand-up, and I decided to devote my life to the community because of this album. So like when I knew I was coming on here, I wanted this album. Because I know that the podcast is about an album that changes your life.
Yeah.
This song changed my life. Like, that's how important music is.
Sure.
That, like, this song, We the People, changed my life.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.